Just a quick announcement. If you haven't heard, the program was canceled. That program was the 1 o'clock program with Chris Smalls at the Unitarian Universalist Church. His plane was delayed, so that won't be happening. So if you're headed that way, turn around and go home. If you purchase a ticket, your ticket will be automatically refunded to your card. So we'll announce when it's rescheduled. So thank you so much for your patience. This is KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
This is April Grace, and you and I are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, and 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also streaming online at kpfk.org.
Good afternoon. You're listening to The Car Show on KPFK. I am your humble host this week, Michelle Spencer. Mark and our co-host Carl are on vacation this week, but they will be back next week. And this week, instead of the gents who are usually here, I am joined by our friend and frequent co-host guest. He is a staff reporter for Automotive News, and he's based in Seattle. He covers Audi, Bentley, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, Scout, and Volkswagen. He is Jack Wellsworth. Welcome back, Jack.
Hey, Michelle. Great to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. I love saying that. Welcome back, Jack.
Yep.
All right. We are going to jump right into calendar items and wanted to make sure that everyone knows that tomorrow at the Peterson Automotive Museum, they're having their Porsche Cruise-In. I went to this last year. I think Mark did too. So it goes from 9 a.m. to noon. And this ranges from the very beginning of Porsche with the production of the 356s to everything leading up to the current performance GTs, racing cars. You'll see a little of everything. Of course, you can always decide if you want to just hang around the air-cooled stuff or check out the race stuff or check out all of the water-cooled Porsches. But it's really, really a big event. It's one of the biggest cruise-ins of the year for the Peterson. You do get free coffee, free bagels, and a Porsche Cruise-In event poster. I do have mine somewhere around the house. So they wanted us also to announce that this cruise-in coincides with a brand new exhibit that they just launched called Zwart Speed, celebrating the cars of Jeff Zwart. So this exhibit is not in the main museum building. It's down there in their basement, which they call the vault. And so this exhibit with the Zwart race cars is something you can access through a ticket by purchasing the vault pass, okay? So when you get your access to the vault, you get to see the Zwart Speed exhibit. And it's going to run for about a year now. June 2027 is when it will close. So who is Jeff Zwart? Well, he is a photographer, filmmaker, racer, and, of course, a Porsche collector. So, yeah. Oh, also, while you're there, you can go to the cruise-in and then drop into the main part of the museum if you like. Fast and Furious exhibit is still going. They also have the Made in America 250 years celebration of American cars. They have the 100-year celebration of Mercedes-Benz vehicles. And they have the World's Fastest exhibit, Legends of the Dirt exhibit, and the Forza 6 Horizon Experience. So there's always a lot going on.
Yeah, could spend a whole weekend there. That sounds pretty cool.
You could. The last time, what did I go to? I went to one of the cruise-ins, and I tried to get into the Fast and Furious exhibit, but it had just started, and it was so busy. So maybe this time can drop in there and check it out. So if you want your tickets, to the Zwartspeed exhibit or just to go to the Porsche Cruise Inn tomorrow, you still have time. You can go to peterson.org to get your passes all set up. Okay. Also tomorrow, there's a classic minis cruise at Griffith Park in the merry-go-round area parking lot. So it says meet at 8 a.m. there at the Griffith Park merry-go-round parking lot and go at 9. And Mark did not give any information about how to sign up for this. So we are going to assume that you just show up with your mini. Classic. Yeah.
There you go. I'm sure they'll be more the merrier. I'm sure they'll be happy to see minis of all years and colors. So
that's true. So classic minis can go all the way back to what, the 50s, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that could be really fun to do. Minis are such a blast.
Yeah.
All right. So we have the Lowrider Magazine Tour, and that is closing on September 5th. It's taking place right now at the LA Convention Center. So let's see. Lowrider Magazine is putting us on, and this goes for, let's see, elite lowriders, custom bikes, vendors. They all have lifestyle brands and, of course, automotive culture. So let's see. I do not have a website for this, Mark. You know, you always got to blame the guy who isn't around.
Right. Yep.
It's his fault. He needs to come back from his journey and get back here. All right. And also September 5th at the Mendenhall Museum of Gasoline, the Gold Coast Roadster and Racing Club is having a gathering of speed record setters and hopefuls. And this will be in Buellton, Zacha Street. Good wine tasting up there. By the way, Jack. Valley, yes. If you ever get a chance to go to a car event or something, go there. Salinas Valley, Buellton. It's great wine country.
Very cool.
Yeah. The attendance is limited on this, 150. And it's $75 per person. So gates open at 10. Lunch is served at 1 o'clock. This will be September 5th. And go to, okay, you have to email somebody. You ready? vulture, like the bird, at highway246.net, and it's hwy246.net. Okay. All right. And Big SoCal Euro 2026 is taking place on Sunday, September 6th, at the Front Wave Arena down in Oceanside, which, of course, is in North San Diego County. And you can follow them on Instagram at big_Euro, just one word. And then September 12th, SoCal 356 is having its car show at the Old World Village. And that's in Huntington Beach, September 12th from 9 to 1, 7561 Center Avenue. And, you know, Old World has been there forever. This is a cute little recreation of a German village.
Oh, cool.
In the Alps. Yeah, so it's a perfect place to show 356s, and they do often.
Okay, that's super cool.
Yeah, and this will be really fun because it's free, and there is a German deli, so you can eat some German food while you look at the German cars. And there's always a lot of photography here because they position the vehicles right in front of the cute little village shop windows and doors. And so it's super cute, you know, that kind of thing. All right. September 12th at the Lions Automobilia Museum in Rancho Dominguez. They are having Roar of Lions car show. So this is all day long, September 12th. 9 to 2, basically. So they're going to have classics, hot rods, muscle cars, customs, trucks, and motorcycles. And this is a place where Mark and I go quite a bit. They have a lot of car events there. And I had just gone a couple weeks ago for the event with the SAE chapter, introducing a couple of young guys who graduated from college and ended up being on Formula One race teams.
Oh, wow. That's sweet.
Yeah, so they were speaking on how to get your career in F1 launched if you're in engineering, you know, what kind of part of the car do you want to work on, and how to what's the path to get into being a Formula One, you know, engineer, basically. Yeah. So, very fun. So that was at Lions Automobilia. And if you want to participate in the Roar of Lions car show on September 12th, you can register at lionsautomobilia.org. All right. And we'll do the next one is the following day. September 13th is the 34th annual Belmont Shore Car Show. Now, this one is humongous. 14 blocks. Is that enough for you, Jack?
Wow, that's impressive. That's almost 14
blocks.
That's almost Blue Dream Cruise level. That's crazy.
Yeah, and it's on 2nd Street, and there are tons of places to eat, drop in, shop. If you're bored or get too warm, you can always drop into one of the restaurants and have a snap or a something to eat, and then go check out more cars. But yeah, this is like a street fair, and that's on the 13th from 9 to 3. So you can just show up. It's free. You don't have to register or anything like that. And last but not least, we wanted to give a plug for Freak of the Week car show. This one is put on by Amelia Dahlgaard, and she is a member of the Motor Press Guild and is one of Mark and Carl and I's good buddies in the Southern California automotive journalist community. So she does have her own page on Instagram for the Freak of the Week car show. It's Saturday, September 19th in Topanga Canyon from 10 to 2. And if you would like to enter, you know, just go to her Instagram page for Freak of the Week. There's only one. You won't get confused about which one to click on.
That's super fun. I've met Amelia a couple of times. I did not know she had that. That's super cool. So.
Yeah, this is the second year.
Awesome.
So yeah, she had just done it last year, and I wasn't able to go, but our friend, you know, Manuel Carrillo III?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, so he had reported from it and said it was really fun.
Very cool.
I don't know if he entered anything. And I think my cars are too mellow to enter. Like, I mean, I don't think an RX-8 is a freaky car, and definitely my little 1950s inspired Miata is not a Freak of the Week entry. Right. Yeah. So I think I'll go and just see what else everyone else brings.
Yeah. Should have Mark take his old Mitsubishi. I think that counts as that could be a potential freak.
Yes. He'll have to come up with some sort of a theme or something he can decorate it. And then it would be perfect.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that. I'll have to tell him when he comes back. Yep. All right, we're going to have to move on to events. KPFK actually has a fundraiser they wanted to have us announce in our events. So this is a concert, and it will raise funds for keeping KPFK up to speed and very tech savvy and all the good things to keep KPFK 90.7 FM on the air. This is a concert featuring Stanley Clark, and this is a celebration of his 50th anniversary of his 1976 album called School Days. It's going to be at the Alex Theater in Glendale on October 28th at 7:30 p.m. Prices actually start at only $5, and they go on up from there. And you can add on, if you'd like, a VIP experience with backstage pass. That's limited to 150 people, though. So if you would like to get on it right now to sign up for that, you just go to kpfk.org, like we always say. That's the place to go. It's kpfk.org/Stanley if you would like to have your tickets all set up. Let's see. Oh, they want us to say this concert is not corporate sponsored. And all proceeds will go toward helping KPFK continue their mission of supplying independent news and ad-free programming. They wrote bass guitar with a BASE. Okay, that is School Days, the album, revolutionized the bass guitar and remains one of the most influential fusion albums in music history, reaching the top two on the jazz albums chart and top 50 of Billboard's top 200 chart. So there you go. It'll be confirmed guests include, in addition to the star Stanley Clark, you'll have John Densmore, Robbie Krieger from The Doors, Michelle Coltrane, who's a jazz vocalist and performer. I'm sure she's related to Johnny Coltrane. Bassist Rudy Sarzo from Quiet Riot and Ozzy Osbourne and Whitesnake. They will also have Danny Carey, who is the drummer for Tool, Fernando Pullum's Community Arts Center Youth Orchestra, and many more special guests. Wow. They say they have one more special guest that they can't even announce.
Oh, wow. Intrigued.
All right. Pretty cool. And as far as news, we have a couple of items that Jack wants to bring to our attention. And so first we're going to talk about something really significant happening in Malibu before we get to Jack's news stories. Malibu is about to have enforcement start on their speed cameras. They have installed 21 miles along the coast, these speed cameras. Now, this is basically in reaction to a lot of speeding and deaths, frankly, that have happened on Coast Highway just in the last few years. They're going to be using LIDAR and cameras. If you are traveling 11 miles per hour over the posted speed limit, you are going to be in trouble. Now, right now, they're in the education phase of the enforcement. So City of Malibu will not ticket you right now, but it runs through the end of September. So if you do end up exceeding the speed limit by at least 11 miles per hour and you get pulled over, you will get an explanation of what you did wrong. And then after that, you will experience the enforcement phase, which it doesn't really make sense. Okay, warning period begins in late September. Okay, drivers who exceed the speed will receive warnings only for the next 60 days. Then in November, that's when enforcement begins. And you'll have a penalty. So emphasis on violations not adding points to your driver's license or affect your insurance rates. Okay. Now, here are the locations so you can have a heads up to take it easy in these areas. Near Decker Road, Morning View Drive, Latigo Canyon, Carbon Beach Terrace, Carbon Canyon Road, and Tuna Canyon. All those intersections with PCH are where they will be having these automated speed enforcement systems. The cameras are going to be live.
Well, so it's like a open book test. They gave the answers of where to not be speeding, it sounds like. That's that's interesting.
Yeah, so we're trying to get everybody to understand those are the places of concern and where you should really be watching your speed. And I'm sure that those areas are where they've had the biggest number of crashes or preventable accidents. And so it's sad that we have to do this, but, you know.
Yeah. Has this been like a long-running plan, or is this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we had talked about this probably last year. We knew it was coming. But, yeah, so the update is it is now live. So be careful. And speaking of cameras, okay, different kinds of cameras. we won't use the nasty words to describe the flock cameras, but they are not popular. And it doesn't matter what stripe you are, which political affiliation you are, people do not like them because it's a Big Brother situation. So now we're hearing reports of vandalism in at least 36 states. Now it's probably higher than that. People have stolen them, sawed them, crashed them with cars, covered them with paint and stickers. And did you see the one with the spray foam? Yeah.
Thanks. I missed the foam one. Oh, geez.
That one was awesome. So, if you go through social media, there's lots of how-to videos and how not to do this. So, yeah. Then there was one county sheriff down in Texas who said that he was unplugging all of them in his county because he didn't like them. So there you are. Yeah. So the ACLU actually is looking at this. So, yeah. Why? Yeah. Because it's an invasion of our Fourth Amendment rights against search and seizure without a proper warrant or probable cause. And we don't like that in America, right? That's what they taught us in law school.
Yep.
All right. So we have another news item about Ford, and then we'll get to Jack. Okay. So Ford is now, it's changed its approach on EVs and has announced, it's Jim Farley, right? The CEO. For me, it's like musical chairs with these CEOs. I can't keep up with who they all are.
Yeah, he's over 5 years now CEO, which time flies. But yeah, to your point, Ford has definitely had quite a bit of executive churn up until Farley, really. So,
And so Farley has announced the universal electric vehicle platform for Ford, and this will help them more economically produce numerous EVs. And so this is their approach to how to move forward with EV production without going bankrupt, basically trying to do it. So we've already heard about the Fathom. So starting with the Fathom, which is their, it's going to be their, what do you call it? Like not a midsize pickup, but a compact pickup.
Yep. So more like the size of the Maverick, I think is kind of how it's been framed.
There you go.
Nice and tidy sized.
Yeah, nice and tidy, made for city folk, not really for on the farm. So Automotive News, which Jack writes for, has found out that Ford is going to refresh 80% of the North American portfolio in the next 5 years, 6 years. And it will offer 5 vehicles under 40 grand by the end of the decade, which is great. It also promises that half of its global volume will be hybrid EV or extended range EV by 2030. Great. That's awesome. On the gasoline side, Ford will continue turning popular nameplates, including the F-Series, the Mustang, and the Bronco, into families of vehicles. Jack, did you hear something about maybe making the Bronco into a sub-brand?
Yeah, so my colleague Mike Martinez at Automotive News got the scoop that Ford's planning basically to build out the Bronco name into a family. You know, there's already the Bronco two-door, four-door, and the Bronco Sport, but Mike's reporting also shows that there's going to be a Bronco pickup, so another, you know, flavor, if you will. And even on the Lincoln side, Lincoln is pursuing a Bronco-based vehicle, so I think Ford's really leaning into some of these models that you say Bronco, you know what it is. And I think they've kind of realized that there's a way to kind of tap into that potential. So going to be a lot more Broncos on the road, and basically a Bronco factory in Michigan will be the plan, basically. So yeah, it's really interesting, especially because the Bronco went away for a very long time. And now, you know, the last, it's been back and it's going to be around for the very long foreseeable future.
Yeah. I like that idea of the Bronco pickup, because everyone knows that, you know, it's a great size SUV. It's really cute. Very, very popular. They're a good seller. So this is a good move for Ford. And then going back to their EV Fathom that they revealed a couple weeks ago, this is priced under $30,000. And so with the destination fee included, it's $29,945. So just a squeak under $30,000 for its standard range model. This thing has 4 doors. It will seat 5 people. And they're saying it has more interior passenger room than the RAV4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of big claims.
Yeah, I know. The Blue Cruise is Ford's adaptive cruise control, so it will have that standard. You don't have to pay extra. It will be built in Kentucky. They did not say how long the footbed would be. but who wrote this? Okay. A fathom is 6 feet, so the bed should be 6 feet.
That sounds like Mark.
Yeah. But the mule spotted around Long Beach were the size of the Maverick, so more likely the bed is 4 feet. Okay. Not approved by Virgos. Yes, of course. The EV range has not been announced. Okay, but this did meet Farley's promise of pricing this new midsize EV pickup to be below $30,000. And this comes right at the time that Slate is starting to hit the market, right?
Yes, yep.
Yeah. So Slate's price is lower. Yeah, $26,400.
But Slate's only got two doors, two seats, so I kind of feel like we're getting a good rivalry about to start here.
I think so too. Right. So for your $26,400, you get crank windows. Yep. You get no speakers and there's no standard tech. So if you want anything, you have to add on. So this will be really interesting to see, you know, head to head how Slate hits with the Fathom.
Yeah. I feel like we're going to be inundated with Slate Fathom comparisons for the next 2 years once both products are on the market. But I mean, at the same time, you know, it's cool that we're seeing, you know, two different answers to the affordability crisis. And it'll be super interesting. I feel like it's easy to think, oh, the Fathom will run away with it once people can compare the two. But, you know, until we get seat time with the Slate, I guess it'll be kind of TBD. So
yeah, because, you know, one of the things that hasn't been discussed because they haven't made them available yet for test drives is, well, how do they feel when you drive them?
Right.
And how are they handling? And does the Slate feel clunky compared to the Ford or whatever? And then, of course, there's the issue of customization with those Slates that I think it will be so fun to see what people end up doing with them.
Yeah.
The colors and the patterns and things like that that Ford just will not do. That's just not what they're built for. All right. So tell us about your news story on the Mini. So Mini Coopers, or are we talking vintage Minis?
These are new Minis. So the modern, I guess, as it were, Minis. They started a new program didn't start this year, but it's the racing part of it's kind of new. So Mini USA this year for the 2026 season has joined the American Rally Association. So some of your listeners might know that's kind of at the moment the pinnacle of rally racing here in the U.S. There are rumblings and potential of the World Rally Championship making a return to the U.S., but that series has been offline in America basically since the late 80s. So ARA is kind of picked up as like the top rally league here in the U.S. They have about 8 different races in the national championship across the country, ranging from Washington State, where I live, all the way up to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. They go to Tennessee and Missouri. But Mini is back, or they've joined as a full-time participant as a factory back team for the 26th season. But the cool thing that I learned somewhat recently is that at each of these national championship races, at least 2 technicians from a Mini dealership are working on each team. So there's the race team they're working with is L&P Motorsports out of Indiana. They have 2 cars. One is a Cooper S, and one is a Cooper Country or a Countryman, so the larger of the two, larger of Mini's vehicles. And both cars started off as a regular stock Mini, you know, right off the factory line. They're not professionally outfitted as a rally car per se. They're kind of modified to be rally cars. But what's really cool is Mini's partnering with some dealerships, and the dealerships will load out a technician or two for a given rally weekend. And basically, you know, the race team is leaning on these technicians' expertise because they kind of know the ins and outs of these cars. They're working on them. They're wrenching on them day in and day out at dealerships across the country. And so it's kind of a cool thing. Mini has done this for about 10 years now in other racing leagues. So they used to be racing in IMSA with some sports cars or sports car series. But, you know, the rally element is new. Of course, Mini fans will say, well, they've been rallying for a long time, and that is true. Mini's rally heritage goes back pretty much to the beginning of the company. And in the 1960s, Mini was super successful. They won the Monaco Rally, which is, you know, kind of a, that's a big deal. Monaco is always a big deal, but even in the rally world, it's important. So yeah, it's kind of a cool story that, you know, Mini hasn't forgotten its rally racing heritage, but also getting technicians involved. And in a, I think in a way, it's also probably a, maybe a recruitment tool, or also like a advertising way to like let people know that, hey, if you're interested in being a dealership technician, A, we want you because there's a dealership technician shortage in this country, but also B, you could potentially be working on a race team. You know, might not happen every year, but it is an option. The techs can either self-nominate themselves, or a, you know, a service department or a dealership employee can nominate them. And it really seems like Mini's trying to get as many of these techs working on the race teams, because again, it's something cool for them. It's kind of a way to give back to their technicians, and for the dealership, it seems like a win-win, because you're still have a technician employed, but you're also kind of giving them a cool experience that not most people can do. I've been to one rally race while living out in Washington State, the Olympus Rally out in Shelton, which is about an hour and a half west of me in Seattle. It's on the Olympic Peninsula. It's probably one of the cooler work things I've ever done. It's really hard to explain a rally race unless you experience it. Saw like all four seasons in one day, was right on the road when the cars was by. It was super fun. So if any of listeners out there ever had the chance to do a rally race, I would highly recommend it. It's one of those things you just kind of have to experience, especially if you're a car person. It's super cool. So yeah, it was a super fun story to write. I talked to a couple techs and they both just like glowed about the experience. They both loved it. One of them had done two races this season, and the other one had done some more like racetrack work with Mini before. But, you know, they both kind of said working in the outdoors, you know, you don't have a lift. You're kind of working on your back if you need to. And the fun thing with rally racing is if you need to fix something, you kind of have your options. So you can, if you need to use duct tape, you can do that. If you need to kind of hammer the car out, you can do that too. So it seems like the techs really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's a good way to put their, you know, retail expertise into like a different environment. So yeah, it was super fun.
Do they follow in like a chase vehicle with all this, the extra tires and tools and things?
I think mostly, no, they stay back in like the, it's not a pit area, but there's like a service area. I do know like when the cars flip over, that's kind of when everybody helps out. And you
that flip over.
Yeah. I saw a couple flips, or I didn't see the flips happen, but I saw a couple flipped cars at the Olympus Rally, and it kind of becomes like a team effort to get the car shiny side up again. But yeah, it's kind of a, you know, it's, rally racing is very different in that there's like not, it's not as like, it's not a track per se. It's more like the outdoors. And then that means where the cars get serviced isn't like a pit stall like we see in other racing leagues.
Oh, so they would just radio back and say, oh, I hear a rattle, or oh,
yeah,
I'm going to stop because I blew a tire. Okay.
Yep. So yeah, it's
wow,
super
how
fun.
How fun is that? I wish they had that in California.
Yeah. It is interesting, like the rally map as it stands right now, you know, it's on the West Coast in Washington State, but then it's a lot of like upper Midwest, you know, Midwestern places. But like I said, there is talk that the World Rally Championship might be coming back, and we don't know where, but I would imagine they'll try to make it easy for people to watch or follow along if and when it does come back. So definitely stay tuned on that. So
yeah, like you said, Mini has such a racing heritage. I know if you've read any of Denise McCluggage's books, she was a journalist for Auto Week back in the day, but she also raced. And one of the vehicles she raced was Mini Coopers.
Yeah,
or Mini's. They were hilarious back then. They had these teeny little tires.
Yeah.
So in her books, there's photos of her racing them. And it's hard to believe, you know, that they didn't completely run off the track all the time, but they stick with it. They go around curves just fine. So, that's really a cool thing.
Yeah.
All right. And so also you have a story on the new Bentley, the new EV.
Yeah. So Bentley is going to be showing its first electric vehicle in September. So we're not too far away. It's the Torcal, which is named after a region in Spain, I believe. And this is, you know, Bentley has said for a while that they're going to have an electric vehicle. That's not necessarily new. Like many brands, Bentley initially was going to have a lot more EVs. They've kind of walked those timelines back, but this will be their first vehicle. It's going to be a crossover, and it will be slightly smaller than the Bentayga. So it's, I think, it'd probably be more aimed at like European customers. It's a bit easier to drive in tight corners and more garageable. Having said that, I am sure Southern California is probably their largest anticipated market. I haven't talked with the Bentley US team yet about that, but just given the EV culture that there is in Southern California, I'm sure once these cars will be delivered next year that you'll see many Torcals running around. But what's cool about this, you know, automakers always do kind of like the drip, drip, drip product detail announcements. And the most recent one Bentley had on this car is that customers will have the option of merino wool in the interior, which Bentley is saying it's the first time that it's 100% automotive grade version of this wool. They partnered with a company in the UK that's known for working with wool and is, from what I gather, kind of a expert in the wool department. But they did have a teaser photo, a teaser video. It looks like it's going to be featured kind of like on the side panel of a door, maybe like around like where the glove box is, and then on the seat backs. So kind of in high touch area or touch point areas. It looks really sharp. You know, I haven't seen it in person yet, but it, from the photos, it looks really nice. And yeah, you know, these, the ultra luxury brands seem to really always be kind of pushing each other to add in new materials, new styles, things like that. You know, I think if you look at a Bentley from today versus 20 years ago, you know, the one from 20 years ago looks nice, but now it's a lot more modern materials. There's still wood if you want wood. But it does seem like Bentley, Rolls-Royce, these types of brands are making like intentional design decisions that appeal to, you know, a wide range of customers, but also kind of keep the ball rolling and, you know, make sure things don't feel staid or kind of outdated or anything. So it'll be, I'll be curious once the car's been fully unveiled, how prevalent the wool material is. And it'll be interesting to see, like, touch and feel it. You know, it is supposed to be kind of a comforting material. You know, it's supposed to be one that feels luxurious. And yeah, I think of it a lot of times it's in high-end fashion or, you know, like hiking gear, things like that. So it always seems to be very purposeful material. So it'll be cool to see, interesting to see how it's used in the automotive realm. But I would definitely imagine, you know, it might start with this being in this one car, but maybe it'll be spread across the Bentley lineup and then you could kind of go from there. But yeah, it'll be fun to see, I guess.
Yeah, the possibilities are kind of endless because you could match your merino wool color to your exterior color and then coordinate your wood along, sort of like doing an interior design in a living room or something. But
yeah,
just looking at Jack's article and the photo, it looks very plush, very comfortable. It looks like a wool blanket where you'd want to just lay down and take a nap.
So
if that's what Bentley was going for, you know, total comfort and letting someone else drive while you're snoozing, that's, that looks like very cozy.
Yeah, for sure. So yes. Like I said, it's super interesting to see like these different materials being incorporated in interiors. Even from when I started covering automotive 10 years ago to now, there's been like a lot of new things. And like BMW is using slate as an option in the X5. That's like super cool. You know, we've seen some companies like look into like using cork. I don't think that's really come to production yet, but again, I feel like the sustainability aspect's playing a role here too. So definitely, you know, it's wool today, but who knows what it'll be tomorrow or
year,
5 years from now. So.
Exactly. Wow. Very interesting. You know, we might see a lot of competition in material wise, especially in the upper end, Rolls-Royce, Bentley, you know, maybe even Jaguar, where I think Carl is up there in the UK right now, checking out the new Jaguar.
Yeah. And as long as the people pay for it, we'll probably see more materials. So.
Exactly. And customization is something that is a luxury, right?
Yep.
Except for if you're getting a slate, but yeah. So that article can be viewed on automotivenews.com.
Yep. Autonews.com. And yeah, check it out. And like I said, the Bentley will be shown next month. So definitely stay tuned for that. And it'll be fun to see the reveal. So.
All right. That would be nice to hear after you get a chance to look at it and sit in it.
Yep.
Cool. Then you have a story on Hyundai.
Yeah, so this is from my colleague Hans Greimel, who's our Asia editor, and he was in Seoul, South Korea this past week. Hyundai Motor Company had their annual, they call it like a CEO day. So basically it's a day meant for investors, but then the media attends because they, the last couple of years have thrown out a ton of news. And, you know, Hyundai obviously has a large Southern California presence. It's a big market for them. And they've, at the last few LA auto shows, they've really kind of been like the big newsmaker. This past year, they showed the Crater concept, which was kind of their, I wouldn't say their first off-roady vehicle, but it was like very clearly aimed at like the off-road enthusiast space. And then they recently showed the Boulder concept, which was a body-on-frame vehicle. I think a lot of people thought it looked like the Ford Bronco concept of the early 2000s. So basically, Hyundai has been dropping hints for a while that they see, or that there's dropping hints of off-road minded vehicles, or, you know, crossovers, SUVs that us Americans like to buy, you know, even though we probably don't need them all the time. But this past week, Hyundai Motor CEO Jose Munoz kind of walked the media and the investor community through what they see coming. And basically, it's going to be a lot of body-on-frame trucks. It's going to be SUVs, pickups, things like that. And it's really Hyundai's entering segments that they aren't currently in. So, you know, Hyundai in the North America, at least, has really been growing their crossover portfolio. They have offered a pickup with the Santa Cruz. That's kind of a very small volume model. But yeah, so from this investor day, they're targeting 100 new or refreshed models over the next 4 years globally. So not just in the US, but globally. And, you know, they see a lot of, it seems like, you know, SUVs, pickups are going to be a huge part of that. And because again, they're not really in those segments right now. So, you know, Hyundai, I think, has grown a lot in the last, you know, from, I think, like when I was a kid, it was mostly like sedans and whatnot. And now they have a crossover of every shape, size that you can think of. They have Genesis as their luxury brand. They're really diversifying, which is, I think, pushed a lot of other automakers to kind of follow their lead. And, you know, Hyundai is definitely, I think, part of why they're doing this is because of the rise of the Chinese automakers in other markets. But at the same time, it's clear they see a lot of promise in these segments, especially in the US. So definitely going to see a lot more Hyundais coming out. I think is it Fountain View or Fountain Valley that they're based?
Fountain Valley, yeah, right there. Here in Orange County. That's their headquarters.
So if you see a wrapped Hyundai with camouflage and a manufacturer plate, it's probably one of these new vehicles that your CEO has been talking about recently.
This is true. So, and yeah, they have done remarkably well stealing market share in the last year and a half or so. And something else that Hyundai just announced that I hadn't been able to find time on the show to announce yet, but they have so much going on at their dealerships, they're going to be outsourcing where they'll come to your house to do service on your Hyundai. So mobile service is coming for Hyundai. I mean, who else does that except for Tesla?
Right. Yeah, no, they definitely seem to be focusing a lot on like the consumer experience, making it pretty easy. They've done some pilots with like online cases like that. So yeah, definitely stay tuned. And then one other thing that they mentioned too for the first time, that the Santa Fe crossover is going to have an extended range electric vehicle option, which is super interesting because we haven't really seen a lot of those yet, let alone in like a crossover shape. You know, it's a lot of pickups have been mentioned as that. So that'll be a very unique offering in a, you know, competitive segment. So
definitely. Yeah. So for that story, go to autonews.com.
Yep.
And Jack does not have a review, but I do. So I had recently the Mazda 3 hatchback. So this was the 2026. There is no refresh or anything new on it. In fact, the last time I had reviewed this was in 2024 when it was refreshed. And they had just added in Apple CarPlay and what's the other one? Android Auto. That's it. I don't use that one, so I'll think about it. But yeah, so they had had also introduced the Carbon Edition for the Mazda 3 hatchback in 2024. Oh. They're still doing it. I checked. I didn't have that one, but that's the ooh and ah. That's the really fancy looking one. So, that's cool. That was new for 2024, and they still sell it. But yeah, so I had the automatic manual. I did not have the automatic. I had the manual. It's a 6-speed.
Okay. And save the manuals. The Mazda's doing their part.
I know, right? I saw something the other day with a breakdown of all of the OEMs who are still offering manuals. And I'm amazed at how many there are, actually. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping that that list stays intact.
So
this trim level was called S Premium, and it's above the carbon edition, but it's not the top. The top trim level for your Mazda 3 is actually a turbo that unfortunately only comes in automatic.
That's a bummer.
So, Mazda, what are we doing here?
Well, I guess at least they're still offering a hatchback. That's become like a very...
Another thing. Remember, well, Volkswagen with the GTI and the Golf R. So we've had a lot of hatches over the years. I think VW was actually the one that really kicked that off. And now, you know, even I think Kia just came out with a K5 hatchback. So on top of its sedan. So people are still getting hatches. And maybe with the gas prices going so high, we'll see a resurgence of interest in hatches. As far as driving concerns, hey, you can't go wrong with a Mazda 3 in a hatch. And it's a great city car. It's got fun handling. The one I tested is a 2.5 liter DOHC, 4-cylinder, direct injection, and it's all-wheel drive, standard.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, 186 horsepower. So we're not talking a lot, okay? It's about the same as my Miata. And I drove it a fair amount, but this is not something I already knew this car because I actually leased a Mazda 3 for a little while, like from 2013 to 2016 before I got my Miata. So I was very familiar with these cars. The front is independent McPherson struts. The rear has torsion beam axles. Okay. Inside, you get near luxury. That's the thing that Mazda wants to emphasize with their newer vehicles. And we're talking like the last 5-6 years. Premium interior. So we are getting soft touch on surfaces, the console, the door panels, and the dash. Is it leather? No, it's pleather. And it's black plastic in the other parts, which, again, that's Mazda. You'll get some nice touches, and then the rest is just okay, because they need to keep the pricing, you know. They want to give you the near luxury features, but they don't want to bump up into a luxury price.
Right, yeah.
But they do give you nice things inside, like they have a head-up display. They have heated seats.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, in a Mazda 3. I'm not even sure that the one I had had heated seats back when I leased one. Your cargo space is 20 cubic feet. It's got a good layout. It's got 60-40 on the rear seats, so you can split if you need to do extra storage of long things in the cargo area. So that's nice. The back seats are a little more cramped than, say, the competitors like the Civic or the VWs. But the driving handling is a driver's car. Mazda puts out driver cars, and so you're going to enjoy your drive experience. One thing I did not like was there was no hatch open button.
Oh, still the old school manual thing?
Yeah, old school, where you got to click it or you have to go in the back and touch it, and it'll pop up. But it also doesn't have a power lift gate, so you can't push it and it won't automatically go down. So there's those kinds of things, and this was on one of the top models. So if you go down, if you really want to get into one of these, you know, you're not going to get a lot of those kind of luxury amenities, but it's very nice. They still use the in the center console, they have the knob that controls the infotainment system.
So
Mazda's still doing that, and they are doing this because of safety concern. Their philosophy is, if you're doing a touch screen, Even if it's at eye level, you're still having to look away from the road. If you could learn how to navigate through your control knob and click through things using your control knob, you never take your eyes off the road. So that's why it's still there. Some of my auto journalist friends don't like that, and they want a screen out. Everything worked fine on it. I didn't have any issues with my Apple CarPlay or navigating through it. It worked great. Let's see. Okay. Miles per gallon. Since we are in a manual, we're expecting to have really good MPGs, right? Well, it's rated at 26 city, 34 highway. I drive like a maniac, so I got 27.2 average.
Okay.
That's not bad. Right. You could do better if you were more conservative than I drive, obviously. The nice thing about Mazdas is they're so reliable. They get great safety ratings. I looked this up to find out if they still had the NHTSA five-star rating for 2026, and they do, the entire lineup of Mazdas. Same with IIHS, top safety pick plus for the Mazda 3 this year. And Car and Driver, they picked the Mazda 3 for its editor's choice award. They said it's engaging to drive, it was fun, but it was refined at the same time with a posh interior. So there you go. It is assembled in Japan. The model that I tested, the S Premium, starts at $31,000. I went and looked at how much this Soul Red metallic paint would cost, because that's the one that everyone wants.
Yeah.
And they do add on $595 for the Soul Red paint.
Okay. That's kind of like the hero color, right? Like that's the one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People stopped me when I was test driving this and said, oh man, I love that color. So if you get a Mazda, one of the newer ones, you should really get the Soul Red. It just looks so good.
Yeah. That's cool.
The interior is black. So the problem with that in California, I don't know other parts of the country, but it's too hot. I have interior on my Miata and I'm looking at options. You know, I might get Pepita seats or something.
I
think class seats are better for Southern California and Texas and Florida, as the hotter states.
Right.
So as tested, it was $33,855. Yeah. But you can get in with the lower trim levels at $25,000 and it goes up from there. If you want that turbo, yes, you get a lot more horsepower, but you're going to have your automatic. It's priced a lot higher too. It's $38,000.
Well, that's a pretty penny.
Compared to the one I tested, that it, and again, it doesn't come with the stick shift. And if we want to do a comparison with Volkswagens, since that's your favorite. So if you take a look at the Golf GTI, it has front wheel drive. This one, the Mazda 3, has all wheel drive. 241 horsepower, yes, and 35,000 roughly to get into it. And then your Golf R is all-wheel drive standard, 315 horsepower, but it's 45,000. So there you go. There's a trade-off. Yes, your Volkswagens are going to be more sporty, more track-ready, more ready for canyon carving than the Mazda 3, which is more of a city car. But you're going to pay a little extra for all that sportiness.
Right.
So it really depends on what you want. Like I was looking for a commuter, so it was perfect for me to have that as a commuter. If you really want to be sporty, or you want autocross, or you want to, you know, like I say, go up on Angeles Crest and have fun in the canyons, you probably want to get a Volkswagen.
Right. Yeah. Let's at the same time, I'm glad we have options still in the enthusiast hatchback arena, because
exactly
one of those things that we're seeing fewer of, unfortunately.
Yeah. Now, in the Mazda community, we always are sort of our nemesis is the Honda Civic guys, right?
Okay.
So I had to take a look and see how the Mazda 3 compares to the Honda Civic. So the Civic is just going to be a basic interior. It's not going to have any of these luxury touches I was mentioning. And it also doesn't have all-wheel drive. But
right.
Huge advantage, the Civic comes in a hybrid.
Right. Yeah. That's been a huge part of Honda's strategy is the hybrids.
Yeah. If I was, you know, if Mazda's listening, you guys need to come out with more hybrids. This one would sell like hotcakes if it was in a hybrid.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's just one of those differences. You'd save a lot of gas money if more Mazdas were in hybrids. So, right. But I loved it. Obviously, I'm a Mazda girl, so it wasn't a hard sell for me. And like I say, it was the second time I've driven a tester that was a Mazda 3. Always enjoyable.
That's cool. How's the cargo space? Is it like pretty usable in the hatch?
It is. Yeah, like I say, it's 20 cubic feet, and it's you can configure it by pushing down the 60/40 in the back seats.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So it is flat. I checked it out. It is perfectly flat.
That's nice. Yeah, I feel like it's amazing how much like a little bit of an angle is when the seats are up, like how that eats into your cargo space or what you're trying to pack in. So that's the flatter the better for sure.
Right. And you can also take a look at the Corolla hatch, the Hyundai Elantra N, and they probably have a little bit more room in the hatch or room in the back seat than the Mazda 3. Yeah. So, you know, there's advantages and disadvantages, but you've got to test drive all these. There's different hatches. Just check them out.
Yep. Sure.
Well, anyway, next week, I'm not sure if they're going to have a lot of reviews for the guys to do, or if I'll get to review another car, but I did recently test drive the Ioniq 9 EV from Hyundai, and that was really amazing. It's a large SUV. That's a 3-row. And for me, sports car girl, it was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I've seen a few of those on the road, and they have a presence. They're really big.
Exactly. They were so big. I was like eye level with Ford F-150s and trucks, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, Jack, thank you so much for joining us today as our special co-host guest.
Anytime. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
If you want more content from Jack Walsworth, writer for Automotive News, go to autonews.com. And you can go to that website and just enter Jack Walsworth, and his stories will pop up.
Yep. Yeah, you can find my author page there, and all my stuff is in one spot. But my colleagues do a lot of great work. So yeah, please check us out, autonews.com. We're currently in our Future Product Pipeline series, which is one of our big events that we do every year. So every week there's a new future product for the next 5 years. Like Michelle mentioned earlier, we just had Ford recently. We're going to have some EV brands coming up here this week. So if you're looking to learn more about what, you know, Tesla, Rivian, they have coming, please check it out, autonews.com. And yeah, it's I'm biased, but it's a great, great spot for automotive information. So.
Yes. And for the car show, we have one social media page. It's on Facebook. So if you'd like to give us a like and a follow so you can keep up on car shows, I do post a lot of stories about car shows that are coming up and car events. And if you aren't signed up, you will not see those. So it's The Car Show on KPFK 90.7 FM. And there are some other car shows on Facebook, so watch it. Make sure it's the one with the McLaren icon. Yes, you can't miss it. And also, let's see, what else next week? Well, the guys will be back, and they have been checking out the Jaguar in the UK, and I don't know what Mark was doing. I heard that he was doing something different in the UK. But
I think it was Volvo related, I want to say.
Volvo related, okay. Yep. So we will find out. All will be revealed next week. Thank you so much again, Jack. And thank you to our board ops for making everything go smoothly behind the scenes. And give us a like and a follow on Facebook. And we will see you next week on The Car Show.
As you may know, listener support makes KPFK possible, but here is something you might not be aware of. Public radio stations around the country raise tens of millions of dollars each year from the sale of donated vehicles. Yep. it's a big deal. Running or not, that vehicle you no longer need, donate it and get a tax break. Go to www.kpfk.org/cars or call 877-573-5288. That is 1-877-KPFK-AUTO to get started.
Thank you.